why are we being penalized financially, potentially, for Congress that isn't doing its job?
Federal workers in Alaska react to the government shutdown. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, October 1st. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the health insurance marketplace in Alaska launches with a few glitches.
Oh, I think this is history making. I think it's pretty cool, so we'll see.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Crowley. Celebrating 60 years in Alaska, Crowley knows Alaska and uses that experience to deliver project solutions from concept to completion. More at CrowleyAlaska.com. And by Enroll Alaska, helping educate and enroll Alaskans in health insurance under the federal mandate created by the Affordable Care Act. Learn more at EnrollingAlaska.com.
Much of the federal government is now shut down because of Congress's failure to pass a funding bill. Huge sections of the government, the costliest ones like Social Security, Medicare, veterans benefits, and war-fighting efforts, remain open. But the shutdown could have big impacts in Alaska, the state with the third highest percentage of federal employees. As APRN's Peter Granitz reports, it's unclear how long it will last.
The Senate convened early this morning and promptly dismissed the latest attempts from House Republicans to slash key elements of the Affordable Care Act. Some federal employees are reporting to work for half days, others have been told not to come in, and some are working hoping they'll be back paid. Senator Tom Coburn, a conservative Republican from Oklahoma, says he thinks many people's fears will come true, that the shutdown will drag on for days, possibly weeks.
Now that you've got it shut down, I think you'll see the debt ceiling and this merge and move together.
Treasury Secretary Jack Lew has warned congressional leaders the government will no longer be able to pay its bills as of October 17th. Congress needs to raise the debt ceiling by that date or face bedlam in the global economy. Senator Lisa Murkowski says the shutdown cannot last into the debt ceiling debate.
I can't imagine the economic chaos that will be created.
Both chambers of Congress could pass bills raising the debt ceiling before the deadline, but if there's one near certainty in Washington, it's not to bank on Congress to give itself breathing room. In Washington, D.C., I'm Peter Granitz.
This morning, hundreds of workers trickled out of Juneau's federal office carrying boxes of personal items, plants, and even pet fish. Basically, any personal items they might want during their furlough. They won't be allowed back to their desk until Congress agrees to fund the federal government. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez caught up with some of these workers today and brings us their voices on dealing with the shutdown.
What went into your 4 hours of pack-up time?
Locking up personnel files, locking up our office, locking up our personal items, making sure that our calling trees are set so that we can get everyone back to work, and making sure that the one person who's left at work knows where everything is.
I came in and shut down some federal websites and posted various notices about the federal shutdown.
I was actually just sharing with a coworker that I've worked a number of different jobs where I've helped shut down a military installation, I've helped shut down a construction site, and this is the first time I've shut down a federal office, and it's a surreal experience.
What do you plan on doing with your time during the furlough?
Right now, I'm going to go start putting my garden away for the winter, spread some seaweed and spruce boughs, and catch up on all those things that I never seem to find time to do.
Are you planning on spending less money right now?
Yes, I'll definitely be eating at home, definitely be hanging out with the dogs, and will not be, you know, whooping it up with all these free hours. I'll definitely be watching my spending habits.
I think we can apply for unemployment in case it's a long-term furlough. If it's short-term, it won't matter, but that's the wise thing to do.
I'm a supervisor, and I kind of feel bad for my employees. A lot of them were pretty stressed. They don't make a lot of money, and to be without pay for a few days affects them quite a bit, especially single parents.
And the irony is, why are we being penalized financially, potentially, for Congress that isn't doing its job? I mean, why are the federal employees who have been doing their jobs all along paying the price?
Federal workers in Juneau commenting on their office shutdown. More than 10,000 federal employees in Alaska have been put on furlough. Alaska's federally run health insurance marketplace officially launched today as part of the Affordable Care Act. Starting January 1st, most people in the country will be required to have insurance, and the marketplace will allow them to shop for insurance and qualify for subsidies to help pay for it. Large amounts of website traffic and other glitches has made it impossible to sign up for insurance on the site so far today. But community advocates for the law are urging patience. APRN's Annie Fite reports.
Samantha Longacre sat down with three people early this morning at the Anchorage Neighborhood Health Clinic. They were all interested in learning more about their options for buying coverage on Alaska's marketplace. But Longacre, a marketplace enrollment specialist, says none of the potential applicants got very far beyond logging into healthcare.gov.
And then the first part is to set up an account so you can, just like any other kind of online resource. And we could get through step one and step two of setting up an account, and then kind of ran into glitches, but at that point could sit down with the person and ask them what kind of questions they had about health insurance in general, and kind of make an appointment or a time to come back.
Anchorage Neighborhood Health Clinic has a lot to gain from the marketplace. According to Development Director John Zazada, nearly half of the clinic's patients are uninsured. He's hoping to sign up 20% of those uninsured patients, about 1,000 people, by March 31st, when the open enrollment period closes. Zazada says the marketplace is a huge opportunity for community health centers.
Anyone that we can add to our patient ranks with insurance just makes our job of ensuring care to everyone in the community a whole lot easier.
Zazada and Longacre were attending a news conference celebrating the marketplace launch at the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium. It attracted a glass half full kind of crowd. ANTHC's Valerie Davidson said a few hiccups on the first day were to be expected.
I remember the very first day the Alaska Permanent Fund Dividend Program started online enrollment, and let me tell you, there were a few glitches that day. But as the system rolled out and people became more comfortable, folks were able to navigate that system and were able to apply for their permanent fund dividends in time to meet the deadline.
Enroll Alaska, a company that has 24 insurance agents ready to help people enroll, had a backlog of about 400 Alaskans by the afternoon who wanted help but couldn't get it. The federal government estimates about 140,000 Alaskans are uninsured, with nearly half qualifying for subsidies to purchase insurance in the marketplace. Susan Johnson is the regional director of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. She says there will be plenty of time for people to sign up.
We want people to relax into all this newness, because change is hard. This is a new language for most. Don't hurry up and get it over with, like a shot or something. Enjoy the shopping. Come in, take a look, make sure you get the help you need. Talk to people, get informed, think about it, weigh your decisions. Don't rush today. Plenty of time.
When I logged into healthcare.gov around 1 in the afternoon and clicked Apply Now, a banner appeared across the page that read, "We have a lot of visitors on our site right now, and we're working to make your experience here better. Thanks for your patience." That's the same message Joan Fisher found when she signed onto the site this morning. Fisher is the United Way's lead navigator for the marketplace.
Oh, I think this is history making. I think it's pretty cool. So we'll see.
Fisher is setting up a small office on the first floor of Providence Hospital in Anchorage, where she'll be able to help sign people up for insurance. But with the healthcare.gov website not working properly and several media interviews, things were off to a slow start.
I haven't even gotten on my computer yet because I haven't been authorized by Providence.
Okay, so first things first.
Yeah.
Fisher and her fellow navigators would like to sign up thousands of Alaskans for insurance in the next 6 months. But she's content to settle in for the long haul rather than sprint out of the October 1st starting gate. Fisher says anyone who wants the process to go smoothly should make an appointment with her in a few weeks. In Anchorage, I'm Annie Fite.
To see what type of subsidy you might qualify for to buy insurance on Alaska's new marketplace, go to alaskapublic.org and search Subsidy Calculator. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the fire code in Anchorage is more lenient with older buildings.
correction of construction deficiencies, lack of fire sprinkler, or lack of fire alarm are fairly onerous requirements to put on building owners.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Join Alaska bars and restaurants from every corner of the state in taking a stand against secondhand smoke. The fact of the matter is, no Alaskan, employee, or customer should suffer the heart disease and lung cancer due to secondhand smoke. The benefits are undeniably positive for Alaskans and for the bottom line. Clean indoor air. It's good for health and it's great for business. For more information on smoke-free workplaces, visit alaskatca.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance.
A 38-unit apartment complex burned down in the Anchorage neighborhood of Mountain View last month, leaving dozens of people homeless. So far this year, there have been 20 fire calls to multifamily dwellings where the fire spread beyond the room where it started, and at least five of them did major damage. All the fires burned older buildings that don't have to meet modern fire code standards. KSKA's Daisha Eaton reports.
Fire investigator Brian Belega stands outside the charred remains of Glenwood Manor, the apartment complex that recently burned in Mountain View.
We had an apartment fire back here in this courtyard in the center on the top floor that was extending left and right. And by the time, you know, we had units, the secondary units start showing up, we had fire already extending into these east-west branches. So that was pretty quick.
He's investigating the cause while cleanup crews sweep debris out of the way. Belega says even though firefighters responded in just 3 to 5 minutes, they couldn't stop the blaze. The building was a total loss. This year, there have been 20 fire calls to multifamily dwellings where the fire spread beyond the room of origin. That's nearly double last year's number and more than any other year in the past decade. So far, nobody has died in the fires, but 7 people were injured. Loss to property and contents combined is estimated at more than $8 million. Belega thinks some simple things could help prevent the big fires, like sprinkler systems, building-wide fire alarms, and attic fire breaks, also known as draft stops. They're plywood walls covered with sheetrock treated with fire retardant that stop the flow of fire laterally above the ceiling.
If we would have had a draft stop in halfway in this structure right here to our left, your left, my right, we probably would have had a fire stopping halfway on that building, and the other half would be saved. So, they work. It's just if they're there.
So why aren't they there? Anchorage Fire Code grandfathers in older apartment complexes. There have been at least 4 similar fires to the one at 221 Meyer Street in Anchorage this year. The buildings that burned were built from the 50s to the 80s. Fire Marshal James Gray says Anchorage Fire Code, as it stands, is a collaborative process that involves lots of different stakeholders, and there are limits to what the public and the building community will tolerate.
Correction of construction deficiencies, correction of fire sprinkler, lack of fire sprinkler, or lack of fire alarm are fairly onerous requirements to put on building owners. So they try to give credit for as many existing provisions that you have in the building, and they don't make you put in those retroactive requirements until you hit a certain level.
Glenwood Manor had been inspected last year, and it passed. But sometimes Gray says he's understaffed and his department can't inspect buildings every 3 years like it's supposed to. Anchorage Fire Code is based on the International Fire Code. It's updated every 3 years and approved by the Anchorage Assembly. Jonathan Steele helps write it. He's an architect with the firm Bettisworth North and a member of the Municipal Building Board. Of the 47 chapters in the Anchorage Fire Code, he says one chapter is devoted to upgrades to older apartment buildings. It works like this.
Once a building has been designed and permitted, as long as its use doesn't change, they don't have to do anything other than these mandatory upgrades that are in a very small section of the code.
In the case of the Glenwood Manor fire, even though it had 38 units, which would normally require some safety upgrades, each unit had an exit to the outside. And according to the code, that exempted the building from the upgrades that could have likely stopped the huge fire. Steele says with all the big apartment fires lately, in older buildings, things might need to change.
Maybe it needs more inspection. Maybe it needs more resources put to the fire department to be on the streets taking a look at existing facilities. That might be a solution. The community needs to get behind it. And that would be the community and the assembly's support and the mayor with funding.
But without making the code more strict, more inspections wouldn't help much. Fire officials say 4 out of 5 of the apartment building fires that KSK investigated for this story had building-wide fire alarms. None, including Glenwood Manor in Mountain View, had draft stops or sprinkler systems. Fire Inspector Belega says that could have made a difference.
If those were in here, the potential for us only to have damaged a portion of this building would have been a lot better for us.
The cause of the Glenwood Manor fire is still under investigation. The Red Cross shelter that housed residents left homeless by the fire closed this past Saturday. A few families are still trying to find housing. The Institute of Real Estate Management, which represents owners and managers of apartment complexes in Anchorage, was contacted for this story and did not return repeated phone calls. Neither did Victor and Rhonda Smith, the owners of Glenwood Manor. The Smiths own several other older rental properties in Anchorage. In Anchorage, I'm Daisha Eaton.
Many Alaskans live their lives by the weather. But how will the government shutdown affect the organizations that provide weather information to the state? KSTK's Shady Grove Oliver has more on the impacts.
The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Association, or NOAA, is shutting down many of its services and furloughing employees. I tried to reach Karen Clayton, Director for Communications at the NOAA Information Office in Alaska, and got this message instead.
Hi, you've reached the voicemail for Karen Clayton, Director of Communications for NOAA. Thank you for your call. However, I'm currently unavailable because of the shutdown of government operations. If you leave a message, I won't be able to respond until funding has been appropriated and the shutdown ends. I'm really sorry for this inconvenience, and I'll return your call as soon as I'm able. Thanks.
Its website, NOAA.gov, is no longer available as well. However, websites that are deemed necessary to protect lives and property are being maintained. That means the website of the National Weather Service, weather.gov, will still provide updated information for its Alaskan regions. Fishermen and others who rely on NOAA's marine weather forecasts and advisories will still be able to get them. The NOAA Weather Radio Service is still up, as well as aviation weather. Tsunami warnings, fire, thunderstorm, and snow information are still available, but the daily update is not. Joel Curtis is a warning coordination meteorologist at the NWS Forecast Office in Juneau. He says his office's work is continuing for the most part.
Well, we're certainly affected, but the National Weather Service is also, and this is a very specific word, accepted. And that is because our mission is for the protection of lives and property. We are open for business here.
So you guys will keep running as usual, then? You're not furloughing people?
Our routine forecasts and our weather warnings will be produced as normal.
He was not able to comment on possible furloughs. The Weather Service website also has links to the Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA. FEMA notes that certain non-disaster assistance transactions submitted on its website will not be processed until appropriations for funding are made. Reporting in Wrangell, I'm Shady Grove Oliver.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. The Medallion Foundation and Federal Aviation Administration set standards for the operation of aircraft and airports. More information at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation. Hope Community Resources has been a part of Alaska for more than 45 years, providing assistance to Alaskans with disabilities. Information on all Hope services and mental health supports is available at hopealaska.org. This message is sponsored by Hope Community Resources.
In Barrow, at the top of the world, receding sea ice is reshaping life. University of Alaska Fairbanks freshman Nelson Canuck thinks the state is obligated to combat atmospheric climate change. He argues the atmosphere is a public trust to be preserved for future generations, like clean water or navigable waterways. Canuck sued the state last year when he was a senior at Mount Edgecombe High School in Sitka. The lower court dismissed the case, but on Thursday, the Alaska Supreme Court is taking it up on appeal. The court will hear oral arguments in Canuck versus the Alaska Department of Natural Resources at Barrow High School. KTOO's Jeremy Shea has the story.
About once a year, the Supreme Court hears a case in a makeshift courtroom as part of Supreme Court Live, an educational outreach program. Thursday, that courtroom will be Barrow High School's auditorium. School officials and local attorneys have been helping students cram on the justice system, the case, even court etiquette and how to dress. Here's Principal Bev Gillespie.
The biggest challenge, frankly, is how in the world are we going to manage all those cell phones?
Gillespie says her auditorium can hold 285 people. Between students, staffers, and guests, it'll be standing room only.
Everyone who goes into that facility will be wanded, will be gone through security. We figure it'll take us about an hour just to get everybody through security and into the seats so that we can begin the process of hearing the court case.
State troopers and local police, about a dozen altogether, will handle security. The plaintiff's attorney, Brad DeNoble, says Barrow is a fitting choice.
You know, it's interesting because Barrow is, of all places, Barrow is being hit one of the hardest with climate change. You know, they've got a very vested interest in the outcome of this.
The case itself hinges on three questions. Does the state have an obligation to protect the atmosphere? Does the judicial system even have jurisdiction? Or is this exclusively the domain of the legislative and executive branches of government? And do Canuck and fellow plaintiffs have standing? That is, a personal interest and injury that the court can address. Canuck plans to be there. He says he was surprised the court agreed to hear his appeal after courts elsewhere dismissed similar cases. The Oregon-based nonprofit Our Children's Trust helped Canuck and other young people file suit in at least 9 states and against the federal government. Canuck is optimistic something positive will come of this.
Well, keeping my fingers crossed and hopefully that we get moving forward with forming some kind of climate reaction policy, both in, you know, at the state legislative level and hopefully in the federal level as well.
Assistant Attorney General Seth Bosang, who's arguing against DeNoble, says he's confident.
This case is a novelty, and I think the plaintiffs even make that, you know, clear in their briefs as well.
For classroom and case materials, visit the Supreme Court Live page. In Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea.
Gavel, Alaska is tentatively planning to provide a live webcast of the Supreme Court's hearing beginning at 12:30 p.m. Thursday at 360north.org. This year's Alaska cruise ship season has ended. Close to a million passengers sailed through Southeast this summer, with many traveling on to points north and west. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld has this season wrap-up.
It was a good summer pretty much everywhere in Southeast Alaska, so we should all have good memories of the season, right?
Our days are usually better on the crummy days, believe it or not.
Thias Schaub is a jewelry designer who's part of the Juneau Artist Gallery. The retired lobbyist is one of about 24 painters, carvers, printmakers, photographers, and potters who run the store as a cooperative. Her family is also in the flight-seeing business, so she knows warm and sunny skies bring in more of those customers. But when it rains, it's better in the gallery.
So they're wandering around town, and we end up, all the shops in the downtown area kind of benefit, and, you know, they've got money to burn.
The gallery is one of hundreds of businesses around Alaska catering to summer tourists. They include gift shops, bus tours, salmon bakes, photo safaris, and gold rush shows.
I would say for the 30 to 40,000 Alaskans like myself that depend on the visitor industry for our livelihood, it was a good season.
John Binkley and his family run paddle wheel riverboat tours out of Fairbanks. The former state lawmaker is also president of the Cruise Line International Association's Alaska chapter.
We finally pulled back from a low point here a few years ago to the million visitor mark on the cruise side. And although we're not quite back to where the peak was, we're headed in that direction now.
I think everybody's into the new economy. It's the new norm, and if we're going to go on vacation, we might as well just go and do it.
Jeannie McFarland is vice president of the Prince of Wales Island Chamber of Commerce. She and her husband also own McFarland's Flotel, a lodge near Thorn Bay.
We have a ton of returning people, and they bring their friends and their friends' friends, and of course it makes our business survive.
Small-town lodges and other off-the-beaten-path attractions cater mostly to independent travelers. Most larger businesses depend on those aboard cruise ships. This year's projected million passenger mark was expected to be the best since 2009, before politics and the recession brought them down. Binkley says a couple of late season factors made the total lower.
We lost a few ports of call due to weather, and also there were some mechanical problems with one of the ships, and a couple of the actual cruises were canceled near the end of the season.
But still, it was a good year, and that's part of a trend.
Between 2010 and 2012, visitor industry employment increased by 7% in Southeast Alaska. That's 400 jobs.
Melanie Shivens of Scheinberg Associates authored a recent regional economic report. She presented it at the Southeast Conference annual meeting in Sitka. Shivens says despite recent growth, next season will be a bit different.
In 2014, the number of cruise ship passengers visiting the region actually might be slightly lower than it is this year by 23,000 passengers. And that's because two Princess ships will be redeployed and replaced with a small amount of less capacity.
Binkley says the shuffle comes as lines try to avoid new, stronger federal air pollution regulations along the U.S. coast.
They've been working under the assumption that the emission control area, which requires them to burn very expensive fuel, would be in effect, and that influenced their decisions to move ships to other locations.
Carnival and some other cruise lines have won waivers from those rules in exchange for installing new emissions control equipment. But that happened after schedules were set, so any change won't hit Alaska till 2015. This is Ed Schoenfeld, reporting from Juneau.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can also follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Daisha Eaton in Anchorage, Shady Grove Oliver in Wrangell, and Jeremy Shea and Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reported from Juneau and Peter Granitz from Washington, D.C. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Wells Fargo, extending its support of Alaska residents beyond banking by supporting the programming of public radio throughout Alaska, giving back to the community. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. The Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority has studied regional population, household, and employment statistics to forecast future traffic and revenue models for the Kinnick Arm Crossing. The authority is updating this data and commissioning an independent peer review of the work that's been completed so far. The results are expected in fall 2013. There's more information on the Kinnick Arm Bridge at kinnickarmbridge.com. This message sponsored by the Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority.
Calling all Alaskan artists, Alaska Public Media's annual art showcase and auction is February 6th through the 8th. This unique opportunity features Alaskan artists and their work in fine arts media in a live auction, televised around the state and in an online catalog. Deadline for submission is December 16th. Visit alaskapublic.org for more information. Proceeds benefit Alaska Public Media.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.